Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, happy new year and welcome to episode 528 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. It is the final podcast of 2024. Chad Smart is joining me from the left coast to talk more about the year in wrestling, kind of unofficially the Cinti Awards, I guess. You know, when we first started doing the blog back in 2010, we kind of collaborated and came up with some quote-unquote Cinti Awards, because everybody seems to do some kind of year-end review or award shows, or, you know, all that, you know, cliche stuff that goes on with wrestling. And I feel like back then it was a lot easier because really it was WWE, TNA, and maybe a little Ring of Honor, but there wasn't as much to consume. And over the years, especially for me, since I've cut the cord with cable, I don't watch, I talk about it all the time here, I don't sit down and watch beginning to end of Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, Collision, any of it. I'm watching mostly on social media. And I know you don't watch as much as you did, but you still do watch a lot. But it just, to me, got harder to do, objectively do an award show when really I'm consuming more WWE stuff and you're probably consuming more on the AEW side. But we're going to do our best here to kind of talk about the year in review. And Chad, first of all, how are you doing these days?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, you know, we were discussing trying to figure out what to do on this episode. And I've seen a couple of the other YouTubers that I watch and some stuff online about the year in awards that they were doing. And basically it's basically the same three people in each, not in each category, because obviously Cody Rhodes isn't winning best female wrestler, but across the platforms, it seems like the same names are always coming up. And so it's like, if everybody else is kind of in agreement on how the year went, all we're doing is, you know, adding to that. So, I mean, I like the suggestion of doing the worst of the year because, you know, controversy creates cash, as I said, and it seems like the negative gets more traction than the positive. But yeah, I agree with you that the amount of wrestling, you know, it has totally changed in the last 10, 15 years where, now you have two major promotions on TV plus TNA. And, you know, I used to really be into the indie scene and, you know, with Chikara, Ring of Honor, and some other like local promotions. But I look at indie results now and I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. I don't know who this person is. And it's even more accessible now. You know, back in the day, I had to buy DVDs and watch. And now there's the Internet Wrestling Television app that you can subscribe to and get shows. But that would just, I mean, you would be watching wrestling 24/7 at that point, trying to keep up.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, back when we were kids, I think we dreamed of this being the reality. And now that it's here, it's kind of like, wow, how do I consume this all? How do I take this all in? And before we really dive into kind of our critiques of the year, or also kind of what I'm looking forward to is talking about 2025 and beyond, really looking kind of into the future. I did post it on the My 1-2-3 Cents Facebook group. So if you haven't joined that yet, please do join the discussion. And, you know, Ken Johnson, who's been a longtime supporter, day one supporter of the My 1-2-3 Cents brand, weighed in and asked, you know, several questions, and I don't know that we'll get to them all. And I am, for those of you watching on YouTube, putting on my cheater so I can actually read this from my phone. He says, wrestlers gone too early. which I don't know if we had any shot, you know, last year we lost Bray Wyatt, obviously way too soon. Yeah. Anytime someone passes away, you know, you're not really expecting it. I don't know that, were there any, I don't remember any WWE or AEW stars passing away this year that were kind of in their prime or still a part of any ongoing stories. Do you?
I can't think of any, and I totally took that the wrong way. I thought it was like, you know, guys I would leave before intermission at shows. And I mean, I don't know if you saw the CM Punk video from Madison Square Garden the past couple of days where he comes running out in the towel. Like if he had left early, which if he'd finished his shower, he may have left early, and then Damian Priest would have got beat up more. So
yeah, I anticipate that becoming an action figure at some point down the road here. Is AEW, this is the one that I think will probably chew on the most here. Is AEW going to pass WWE or at least be even with them? If we're talking 2025, I don't think the answer to that question is yes. And I found it interesting. You said there are two major promotions and TNA. AEW, I think AEW and TNA are closer together than AEW and WWE are in terms of viewership. I know AEW has more visibility because of being on TNT and TBS. And now they're streaming and all that. But, you know, there are so many miles between. And obviously, you know, WWE had a 50-year head start. So I'm not begrudging or holding that against AEW. But I think that one of the things that the diehards on both sides, and it's just like politics and it's just like just about everything else in life, the ones that are really passionate and supportive of it are going to just kind of throw things out there and, you know, be, in my opinion, irrational about the reality of both sides of the coin. And I think that the streaming deals that WWE and AEW both have for 2025 is going to help raise, you know, WWE has kind of established this before, you know, high tides raise all ships. And I think that, you know, we're never going to go into that Monday Night War era again, where you see wrestling head to head at the same time on the same, you know, the same platforms, because I think comparing NXT ratings to AEW ratings, you know, broadcast versus cable, I don't really think that's a fair comparison either. And then, you know, again, how are we going to quantify Netflix and those views? Mm-hmm. And it seems like wrestling fans are about the only genre out there that are obsessed with ratings. I don't see people going on and saying, did you see the ratings for Survivor last night? They, you know, they beat CSI out of the water or whatever, you know, or even NFL games. You know, we don't compare the Bengals game versus the Dolphins game, for example. So I don't understand why wrestling fans become so obsessive about that. And I just said a lot, Chad, so you go ahead and say something.
Yeah, I'll just start talking so I can skip that last sentence and not be too sarcastic. I mean, I get your point with AEW being closer to TNA than WWE. I think the visibility is the big factor, and that's why I say two major promotions. I mean, if you ask people what channel TNA is on, I would say maybe 20% could tell you. And of that 20%, maybe another 5% have the access to watch it, pun intended, since they're on the Access Network.
Yes.
But so in terms of like a visibility and a, I guess if we want to go with a battle scenario, WWE and AEW are your two major factions that are going. I think right now, you know, and I think the bloom is off the AEW rose. You know, it's been 5 years, and I think wrestling is cylindrical, that, you know, when AEW started, WWE was not good. They were, they were pushing Roman Reigns too hard in a character that didn't resonate with the audience, but that has now changed. And AEW has, you know, they're really good in that first couple of years, but now it's how do you sustain the storyline? How do you, and they, we'll see if they can turn the corner with this ongoing storyline that they're doing right now with the Death Riders of Moxley, Claudio, Wheeler Yuta, and some guy named Pac. And as we record this, they have a pay-per-view tonight, World's End, which looks really good. And this thing is, AEW puts on good pay-per-views. The weekly television is great for if you like wrestling. And I think that's the bigger issue is WWE is sports entertainment, emphasis on entertainment. AEW is sports entertainment, emphasis on sports. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think as I've said, you know, a few weeks ago on this show, the entertainment aspect is what's going to draw in non-wrestling fans because they want the story. They want the soap opera aspect. Wrestling doesn't sell. As good as Claudio Castagnoli is, as good as Wheeler, you know, Swerve Strickland, all these guys are, if you just put them in a straight wrestling show, your audience probably isn't going to grow because like, you know, that's why your independent wrestling promotions aren't drawing 1,000 people, you know, to every show. They're struggling to get 100. So, and right now, you know, WWE, like I said, had turned that corner, the Bloodline storyline, the Cody Rhodes finishing the story, it's connected with fans. But that story has to end, hopefully, at some point. And then what happens? How do you, you know, what? And I think, you know, the big thing right now is the price of tickets. It's, you know, when you're charging, you know, $1,000 for a ringside seat or $200 for a nosebleed in this economy, how long is that going to be feasible?
Yeah.
And how do you course correct after that? So.
Right. Well, and I think the other interesting caveat to that is, ticket prices are insanely high, but they're selling out. WWE is. AEW is giving away tickets 2-for-1 and the arenas are empty. You know, I think that Tony Khan's big mistake was going into this fight as a, you know, obviously you want to be confident in your product and do what you can, but coming right out the gate and putting yourself on the same level via, you know, you can go back and read some of his old tweets, you know, putting yourself in that WWE universe, for lack of a better word, I think was a mistake on his part, and not going into this as trying to create and identify your own niche. You know, they made a lot of the same mistakes, in my opinion, that TNA did in those early days, where they were bringing in ex-WWE talent anytime someone was released. And I really thought, I really thought in the beginning of AEW that they were going to get a better handle on the quote unquote war, and I'm using air quotes, with WWE, because there seemed to be so much, when you read online, so much discontent and unhappiness and low morale in the locker room. And then Daniel Bryan and Moxley and Jericho and Jim Ross. And then eventually we see, you know, Lashley and Edge and Christian and all those guys jumping ship. I really thought those were going to be, needle moving moments, CM Punk. And for a minute there it was, but it wasn't sustained. And I think part of that is because Tony Khan, much like Vince McMahon, is a bit of an egomaniac and wants to have the control and the final say. And, you know, Tony Khan books for Tony Khan and the smart fans, the internet fans, the wrestling, you know, the quote unquote wrestling fans. Whereas I feel like, and especially now that Vince is out of WWE, it's more of telling those stories and establishing. And sometimes, yes, I agree, the stories in WWE are drawn out way too long. But on the flip side with AEW, a lot of times I don't feel like there's a story there at all. So I am interested to see what happens in 2025 with the Death Riders and the continued teasing that Shane McMahon is coming in, or whatever that case may end up being.
I think that's been dropped. I mean,
oh, has it?
Yeah.
I haven't heard of Shane McMahon with, I think it was the Bucks, and, you know, people were fueling it again. So, so you think that is,
I haven't seen anything about it since that initial photo. And Moxley, when this angle first started, Moxley did make the comment, this isn't your company anymore, but that he hasn't made any type of comment similar to that since then. So who knows? And and that's, you know, that's the other factor with the internet, and that wrestling fans think they know everything that happens, you know. And I was just watching another YouTube video, and they were talking about Ricky Starks, who's been off AEW television since March. And there's been some issues that have been reported, but the guy said, you know, I don't know what's going on. Nobody knows what the truth is. You know, it could be the reason he could be off TV is because they keep saying like, oh, we want you to do this, this, and this. And he keeps going, no, I'm not going to do that. Because that's allegedly, that's what Miro was doing, was saying, was turning down everything they offered to him. Well, if that's the case, what do you do? You know, so, or is it an injury that no one knows about? Is there something else going on? You know, is it, who knows? So yeah, that is a big issue with the internet wrestling community right now, is just thinking that they know everything that goes on just because Meltzer or someone else, Sean Ross Sapp or Chris Van Fleet says something, they take it, it's taken as gospel. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. To your points though. Yes, I think when AEW first started, it was supposed to be the alternative. And I do agree that they started out too big. And same way TNA, you know, thought when they launched the weekly pay-per-view without being a company to begin with. And so no one knew what TNA was. You're asking people to pluck down $10 a week to watch something that they don't know if it's going to be any good or not.
Let me stop you right there. You're one of those people that did that $10 a week.
I have the sickness.
Why?
And so no life.
Talk to me more about why you did that, though, because, you know, $10 a week may not sound like much, but I know where we
lived. What I was making at the time.
And where we worked at the time. So, I mean, yeah, $10 a week, you know, it adds up.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm a huge wrestling fan, and I put the emphasis on wrestling. You know, I've, again, said it many times on this show, WWE has never been my number one promotion. You know, growing up, it was JCP or WCW, and then ECW. And then even after WCW and ECW folded, you know, I got into Chikara and Ring of Honor. And I watched WWE because I could, and it was there. And so when TNA launched, you know, they had a lot of talent that I liked and was curious to see what it was. And yeah, I had no life on a Wednesday night. So I was sitting at home doing nothing anyway. So why not watch wrestling? And I enjoyed it, you know, and it led to me dressing up like Shark Boy on the 9th episode of the series. So that really shows you why I had no life back then.
But don't you think that's all, you know, because you mentioned Chikara too. Yeah. To me, that's more entertainment based than WWE was as far as the wrestling goes. You know, you've got guys dressed up like
ants, goblins.
Thank you. I'm like drawing
in the box. Blank.
Yeah, you had all this kind of silliness going on with it.
You had the silliness, but you also had good wrestling. And that's where, you know, I mean, you look at the AEW roster and look at how many of those guys were in Chikara, you know. So that's the thing. And, you know, the thing about Chikara, which, and I know during the Me Too movement, Mike Quackenbush kind of got lumped in with that. And that's why Chikara, that's the reason it's given why Chikara no longer exists, because of things that were going on in the Wrestle Factory. I don't know what he's doing now. I don't know if Tony Khan has been in contact with him to bring him in as a storyteller, but you look back at Chikara and the storytelling was there. You know, if you want to talk about long-term storytelling, you know, there would be something that happened because Chikara operated in seasons. Something happened in season 5 that then got paid off in season 9. And it could have been a throwaway line and a promo, and then it comes back. It seemed to be that. And, you know, again, Chikara's booking 2-3 shows a month. So, you know, if you add up all their shows, it's really like maybe 2 weeks of weekly, would have been 2 weeks of weekly television. But when you stretch it out over months at a time, it works. And yeah, and not every story hit. And, you know, the BDK storyline, which was kind of like their NWO or Death Rider Invasion, did have more downs than ups because of the lack of shows, where You know, you couldn't just do one show of them, one or two shows of them beating everybody up and then get your comeuppance on the next show, even though that's 3 months away, you know, in total time. So, but yeah, and that's the thing is, I think, again, going back, storytelling is important. Well, what I was saying about AEW is I think AEW should have started small. And I still think they should. I think they were just in the Hammerstein Ballroom this past week for their Christmas shows. Good environment, which is also something that I think Tony Khan should look for, is booking arenas that don't necessarily look like arenas, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that's one of the things that made ECW popular, was the different venues that they would go into that had a unique look, that had, you know, when you watched it, you knew where they were, and it wasn't just some big empty, I say empty arena in terms of the description of the venue looking the same as every other place that you went to, not because of the amount of fans in an AEW audience. But, and, you know, real quick, going back to your point about ticket sales, WWE is selling tickets, but I'm curious who's buying those tickets. And is it brokers that will try to flip them? Or, you know, and I think even that, if I'm correct, at Survivor Series, there are several empty seats. SummerSlam, there were a lot of discounted tickets the day of the show. Granted, they are still selling tickets. Again, they are very hot right now. And they have the name recognition, whereas AEW is still having to build up. And I think AEW charges too much for tickets as well. You know, again, you have to build the audience before you can gouge the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Where do you see AEW then in 2025? Obviously, they've booked another, you know, we just talked about kind of those smaller, intimate venues. We're going back to another stadium show. They kind of set the precedent in 2023 with Wembley. And then Wembley again in 24, which wasn't as big as 23. 25, we're going to Texas, putting another stadium show on. Is that a mistake? Should they continue to build this traction and momentum up and then go big again? You know, because look at the ebbs and flows that WWE had. Yeah. You know, in the mid-90s, they were running high school gyms. Okay. You know, Raw was coming from high school gyms in some cases. And, you know, 18 months later, they were setting records again. So, you know, we've talked about wrestling kind of being that secular, I don't know the proper terminology for it, but you know, it has its ebbs and flows and its ups and downs, and you know, I think part of it though is it's weird to me to see WWE on such a high plane right now and then AEW struggling. And again, you mentioned ticket brokers and what, but when I'm watching, I see, you know, full arenas, you know, ratings are decent, not obviously like they were back in the day, but I feel like AEW, there's something missing there. And I don't know if it's like Tony Khan hasn't surrounded himself with the right people, or he hasn't doled out that creativity, that storytelling, like you said, a Mike Quackenbush coming in, someone in that regard that would be able to help with the storytelling and the continuity and those kinds of things. I don't know what is missing from that factor.
Yeah, and I think real quick on the storytelling aspect, because you know, a lot of complaints online is AEW doesn't have storylines, which I don't think is true. I think AEW does have storylines. The difference between an AEW storyline and a WWE storyline, assuming that they're both, let's put them on the same pedestal, because AEW does have bad storylines, I will admit. And WWE does their storylines week after week after week. It's the same thing, you know. If we were doing the Senties, one of the nominees for best feud probably would have been CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre. Mm-hmm. That's a feud that went on for 10 months, and it was the same, you know, every week. You knew either Drew was going to come out and say something about CM Punk, or CM Punk was going to come out and say something about Drew, and it just, you know, you knew you were getting that. Whereas AEW will do one part of a storyline and then maybe wait 3 weeks and then come back to it while they're doing something else. And I don't, I mean, to be honest, I don't think that I like it because it's not repetitious, but I don't think it helps in building an audience and building the storyline. Because again, if I'm going to a show, I want to see, you know, there are certain wrestlers I want to see, and I am not guaranteed if I buy a ticket in advance, I don't know who's going to be on the show, you know? Yeah. So I think that hurts, but I forgot what your previous other point was. So I'm just going to say join Dark Order. Tony Khan. Something about storylines. I don't know. I completely lost my thought. But
you know, I will give props to AEW for some of the storylines that they have done in 2025 or 2024, pardon me. Most notably to me is the Mariah May and Toni Storm stuff. I think that they probably had feud of the year in AEW. And again, I don't watch consistently enough.
And real quick, allegedly that feud was planned from beginning to end before it even started.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's, we're talking exceptions instead of the rule, though. Feel like when it comes to, and again, I'm not hating on, I don't want AEW to go out of business. I think it's great for wrestling fans to have something else to watch. And I think it's great for wrestlers, not just the wrestlers and the performers that we see on TV, but the backstage behind the scenes people, that they have places to go now. Because I think as WWE grows and TKO, and we're going to see more layoffs. It's inevitable. I think that as they consolidate services and operations and whatnot, on-air talent and behind the scenes people will be let go. And having AEW strong, having TNA strong, or Ring of Honor or New Japan or whatever the company may be, it's great that these wrestlers have a second shot, if you will, at you know, a second act, a third act, a fourth act in some cases. So I don't, when I give critiques or comments about AEW, it's not meant to be malicious or, you know, I do think Tony Khan is a little weird, but besides that, I do think it's good to have that, I won't say competition, but have that other brand, that alternative brand that people can go to and watch and seek out what they're looking for.
I agree with you, and I remember what we were talking about previously, and that's the stadium shows. And you know, I from what I've seen, I think the Texas show is selling well. I don't think they're going to sell out, but I think and they have a show in Australia in February that was supposed to be at a stadium that got moved to a smaller arena due to low ticket sales. And you know, I read something where AEW is not on, I don't know if it's done on like the basic cable, like you have to pay for it. You know, I don't know. For some reason, the name brand recognition isn't there.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, obviously I don't think Tony is booking these arenas. I think he probably has a booking team that he probably talks to and they discuss what they want to do. But are they, you know, are they looking and saying, hey, let's book these smaller venues? And Tony's being like, no, we have to be big because of an ego thing, of a perception. You know, if you run the VFW hall, we're going to look low rent. So we need to run Madison Square Garden.
Right.
And I would think, you know, with Tony being a wrestling fan and being a big ECW fan, that he would understand atmosphere over size. But again, sound cruel or anything, I think Tony Khan probably has a touch of Asperger's or some type of spectrum condition, and I don't know if that plays a factor in his decision making.
You know, and it's interesting because you hear the stories about Vince McMahon and how he allegedly didn't want to always be right. He wanted people to challenge him, but then you hear that he gets challenged and he fires those people. Listening to I call him the Conrad podcast, you know, many of his co-hosts are AEW employees, Tony Schiavone, Jim Ross, and Jeff Jarrett, most notably. There are episodes where it is like, you know, Tony Khan fellatio hour because they're just, you know, they don't notice any criticism. And on the flip side, Eric Bischoff is doling out all kinds of criticism. So I feel like there's a happy medium there. But, you know, I feel like maybe Tony Khan needs some of those people that maybe challenge or say, hey, why don't we try to do this instead? Or like you said, Mike Quackenbush, or, you know, I don't know how much influence Paul Heyman and Michael Hayes had in the Vince McMahon era. But I do feel like, you know, other voices are being heard and other ideas are being used in the Triple H era. And, you know, I don't know what needs to happen with AEW. I don't think they're going to get even close to being even keeled with WWE in 2025, but I think the Max deal is going to help. I think that they just need to continue to go for that brand recognition and that name recognition. You know, my 75-year-old dad says, you know, every once in a while he's flipping channels and he's like, oh yeah, wrestling's on TNT. He doesn't stop and watch, but he mentions it. And I don't know that. And I always say, well, that's AEW. I don't know that he realizes it's not anything associated with WWE. And I think that maybe the general populace is probably in that same boat as well. Whereas, you know, if you walked around, and I think even if you went around today and asked, name a famous wrestler, you probably today's answers would probably be The Rock, John Cena. And I think you'd still hear Hulk Hogan's name come up. So, you know, AEW obviously hasn't achieved that kind of status where you could walk around and say, hey, what do the initials AEW stand for to the general populace? And probably people wouldn't even know it's a wrestling company. But again, it's just that consistency, and it's with anything, just building that brand. And, you know, it's been said before, this war is more between the fans than it is the men and women and the talent and the companies. It's more of a fan-based thing, I think, that gets fuel thrown on the fire from time to time by people in higher places.
Well, first off, I believe the correct term is the Paul Levesque era, not the Triple H era. We have to separate. By the way, have you noticed at the end of like SmackDown, they put the producers? They say producers. I know, you know, WCW, Saturday Night, and Clash of Champions would always run the credits like a regular show, and Virgil Reynolds was there. But it just seems weird to have just the producers. And you know, and talking with friends who worked for WWE, you know, when Vince was there, it was like he never wanted the crew to be known because for some reason they didn't exist, which I don't know, that's a whole another subject. But, I get the name recognition, and I don't know, you know, in this day and age, because wrestling is so synonymous with WWE, how do you, you know, well, and I'll even go back to WCW, you know, WCW in the early 90s for wrestling was better than WWE. You know, WWE was very gimmicky, very cartoony. And WCW was the wrestling. And then, you know, they started Nitro to start the war. And it was like kind of a back and forth, I think, because Nitro was live every week, as opposed to, you know, WWE being live once or twice a month. And Eric Bischoff was giving away results on Nitro. But really, it wasn't until the NWO storyline kicked in that WCW became hot and became known, let's say. And in the same way, you look at WWE now, it wasn't until the Tribal Chief storyline took off that they started getting hot again. So I think you need some type of big storyline that, unfortunately, I don't think you can predict or plan. I think it has to be organic.
Yeah.
And right now, AEW doesn't have that. Will they have it in 2025? I don't know.
Yeah, but, I don't. Go ahead.
Oh, I don't really know how I was going to finish that sentence. Just other than, it's kind of like, you know, Rocky Horror Picture Show, The Room, Troll 2 are big cult movies. But they were made to not be a cult movie. They were made to be regular movies. And then the movies that are made to be like, oh, this is going to be, you know, so cheesy and it's going to be a cult film, no one cares about, because you see the intent. and it's going to fall flat every time. So I think in wrestling, the same thing. You can't go into a story, and I maybe this isn't a good comparison, but again, I'm using Roman Reigns again because he is the biggest name right now. Go back to when he won the 2015 Royal Rumble, and they tried to make him the big dog.
Yeah.
Fans didn't care. Then he became the tribal chief and became, I think, more of what Roman Reigns might be outside of the ring, and that connected.
And I think this kind of goes back, and I'm not trying to be argumentative, but this goes back to the original concept of stories versus talent. I don't think there's any name that could jump to AEW or that could jump to any talent on air name that could jump to either company that's going to be a needle mover, that's going to, you know, set things up on fire. It's those stories that they build around those talents. And I think that, you know, time and time again, we've seen with AEW, with bringing in Keith Lee or, you know, John Hugh, or, you know, Brody Lee at the time, Christian and Edge, and, you know, all of these talents came through that you thought were going to be someone that was going to, but then they all kind of just fizzled out or faded away. And some of them due to injury, and some of them just due to, you know, like, when's the last time, like you said earlier, that we saw Miro on TV?
He's been released, but.
Well, they wished him a happy birthday yesterday, so.
Did they? Well, yeah. Maybe they're just friendly, but I thought he had been released earlier. Like, they had come to terms because he hadn't been on TV. Because again, he's another one that allegedly, every time they suggested something for him, he turned it down. And I don't know. But real quick, I agree with you. I don't think there's anybody that, I mean, I think John Cena and The Rock could show up on AEW on January 1st, the mother of all simulcast on HBO Max and TBS. And it's not going to move the needle because, yes, those are popular guys. But they're popular because they're WWE guys. They're not popular because they're wrestling guys, if that makes sense. And to go back kind of what I said in the beginning about watching wrestling is we have seen an influx of guys that were in WWE coming to AEW. And I hate the term WWE guys because it's like, well, if they're wrestling, where else are they going to make a name? You know,
right.
You know, it's they should just be wrestling. But I think part of the problem right now when AEW started is you had, again, you had a lot of indie talent that had some name recognition that you could bring in. But right now, I don't think there's, I don't want to say any, because again, not that really up on my indie wrestling, but I would be hard pressed to name you one indie wrestler that could come in and have an impact as, and this is my bias, of Eddie Kingston showing up to challenge Cody Rhodes unexpected, or, you know, I mean, even the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, you know, I knew they were New Japan, Bullet Club were big, but they weren't big on the American wrestling talent. So I think basically what this whole conversation is boiling down to is it's not the talent in the ring per se, it's how the company is presented.
Yeah. You know, let's talk about John Cena here for a little bit too now. 2025 allegedly will be his final year in wrestling. We go back to when he first came out. I didn't think in 2002 or 2003, whenever it was, that he showed up on SmackDown in the brightly colored tights and, you know, kind of that cookie cutter, white meat baby face role, you know, slapping Kurt Angle on the face. Who would have thought 20 plus years later, we'd still be talking about him and you know, the career that he's had.
Yeah.
I think that there are some talents that kind of fall through the cracks and we don't get to see the payoff for them. But then there are guys like John Cena. I would say Daniel Bryan is one of those that, you know, Zack Ryder or now Matt Cardona, if they didn't get the support necessarily from the company. So they went and, you know, pushed themselves and excelled and made the company have to kind of give them a shot. Matt Cardona, not so much. I mean, he ended up getting released anyway, but I think that there is it probably becomes a very fine line, especially back in the Vince McMahon days, of how much do I push, you know, and put myself out there where I'm almost, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Defying the authority here and putting myself out there and not going into business for yourself, but also having to advocate for yourself and kind of go into business for yourself. So I think John Cena is an example of that where, you know, I thought the raps, you know, to me, the early John Cena, I was like, this guy's not going to be around. But I thought the same thing about The Undertaker and Kane and, you know, Triple H as Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And these guys became iconic figures in pro wrestling. And I think that, you know, like you said, who on the horizon, who's going to be those next torchbearers, if you will, for the company? Because John Cena is leaving some big ass shoes to fill as he, again, allegedly is going to wrap things up in 2025.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting if the stories are true, is that John Cena was close to being released. And then they did the Halloween party where he dressed as Vanilla Ice. And then Stephanie heard him rapping, freestyling. And that's what made that character. Again, yeah. So again, like you said, white meat, babyface John Cena, no one cares about. Doctor of Thugonomics, you get people behind. You know, and let's go back 10 years prior to that almost. You and I were just talking about this the other week. We were at a house show in St. Louis the week before King of the Ring 96. Was 95 or 96?
96.
Third match on that card was Duke the Dumpster Drosy versus Steve Austin.
Yeah.
You could have heard a pin drop when both guys come out. Mm-hmm. A week later, Austin coins Austin 316. And the rest is wrestling history.
Yeah.
So you never know who's going to catch fire and how they're going to catch fire. And again, I think that goes back to if you push someone, if, you know, and WWE had this thing where they said, okay, this is going to be our top guy. We're going to push them. And it doesn't matter if the fans like it or not. This is who we're going with. And then you have guys like Daniel Bryan, who wasn't supposed to be the guy. You have guys like Zack Ryder, who wasn't supposed to be popular. But they end up getting it, you know, getting the crowd behind them organically again. It's a key word. And then it's how does the company respond?
Yeah.
Do they run with it and try to make money off of it? Or do they stick to their guns and say, no, this isn't our plan. So tough luck, you know, Daniel Bryan, you're not getting a match at WrestleMania until the fans pretty much demand that be the case. Zack Ryder, you can get all the woo 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 and we want Zack chance throughout the entire show. You're still going to get kicked in the balls by Eve and pushed off the stage in a wheelchair. And then good luck. You know,
well, with Cena specifically, since, mm-hmm. you know, we are kind of talking about 24 in review and looking forward to 25. Do you think Cena will win another world championship to beat Ric Flair? He and Ric Flair are tied at 16. And I know if you talk to Ric Flair, it's 20 something based on, you know, international matches and things that happened back in the day that titles changed and then got returned or whatever. Anyway, WWE records show that it's 16. They're tied at. Does Cena go into 25 and become the 17-time heavyweight champion? Does that happen or should that happen? And then which champion does he beat? And then who does he end it all with and pass that torch on to in pro wrestling?
Yeah, well, the rumor right now, as I'm sure you've seen, is the discussion about Cody versus Cena at WrestleMania.
See, I haven't seen that at all. I saw Logan Paul, actually.
Yeah, I thought Logan Paul retired, but then he was at the Netflix kickoff. So, yeah. I saw the other day that Cena, Cody was being kicked around, which, you know, my one thought is Cena should not win a title during his retirement because to go back to AEW, Sting won the tag team titles in his last match in AEW. I don't think it was the right decision. I know Sting allegedly didn't want to do that either. Same way with Daniel Bryan winning the AEW title when he knew that, you know, his career was ending just a few months later. But Tony wanted, and again, I'm saying allegedly, because I don't know what conversations are held place, but allegedly Tony wanted them to be title holders in the company. I don't think Cena needs another championship. I don't think if you have him win it and then lose it a few months later, it's going to matter. And if he does lose it, it's probably going to be to somebody who's already in a top slot in WWE. It's not like they're going to, you know, and Austin Theory's already beat John Cena at WrestleMania and that did nothing for him. So again, it comes into how do you use somebody after the match? Yeah. And also, even if he beats Ric Flair, it's not going to be a big deal until Charlotte beats Ric Flair's title reign.
That's a true story. So, yeah, I'm kind of in the same camp as you. I don't see that, you know, giving him that 17th run is going to make any difference. And then, like you said, how does he lose it? Who does he lose it to? Does it matter? I am curious because I don't want to necessarily see him wrestle Cody. I'm not big on, especially for the championship, you know, face versus face, unless it's a good story behind it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they could probably get there and put together a story, but I don't know. I'll be curious to see where they go with Cena in 2025 and then when his official, because I don't think they've said when his last match is going to be. They just said sometime in 2025.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they just announced him for the Rumble, the Elimination Chamber, and WrestleMania. So,
yeah. It'll be interesting to see for sure. And, you know, once he retires, will it, you know, my gut tells me it's going to be, it's not going to be a Ric Flair style retirement or, you know, Terry Funk retirement. He's going to walk away.
He's got other options. And
yeah.
In life to do that, he doesn't have to keep coming back.
Well, you know, we've been going a while here. What is one thing? What is something that you want to see happen in 2025 that we maybe didn't get in 2024, or a continuation of something from 24 into 25? What is that thing that you think will help the betterment of pro wrestling in general? Not maybe any particular company, but again, like we said earlier, as companies thrive and do well, I think they all do better. You know, TNA for is an example of that, kind of riding that relationship with WWE. You know, we saw Jordan Grace and Joe Hendry and some of those folks cross over onto NXT, and you know, I know TNA ticket sales increased and they saw a little bit of a boom after that, but what do you want to see happen in 25 that would be something for your fandom?
I'm not sure. I will say, just to have an answer, I want Delirious to come out of retirement and be more active. I think he's working with TNA right now, but I think so. Because I think he could have been, I mean, he could have been promo of the year for the last 10 years, but no, you know, I just want wrestling, kind of like you just said, I want wrestling to be good and entertaining. And again, to focus for companies to focus on themselves and don't worry about what the other company is doing. And don't chase what's popular, because by the time you catch it, something else is popular. So just have focus, I would say. Just know, and again, with the AEW, and I think, you know, this is a case of good and bad. They just finished their Continental Classic tournament, which they had mapped out prior to it starting. They had every single match booked. The problem is one of the competitors, Juice Robinson, got injured and was replaced with Commander. Well, the last match against Claudio Castagnoli, Commander was giving brass knuckles to use to beat Claudio. It was part of a storyline that Claudio had used him previous it would have fit the Juice Robinson character to do so. It didn't fit the Commander character. But because that was a story that was in play, you finish it the way it was already booked. And I think that, you know, that's also one of the big issues with booking long-term is guys get injured or egos get involved. You know, you don't know what's going to happen from day to day. And so I can imagine it being challenging, but in the main focus has to be, there has to be a focus and just, you know, stick to a story. If you have a story in place, like the Mariah May, Tony Storm, let it play out. If it doesn't get over with immediately, don't just panic and try to jump to something else.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, TV, you know, how many sitcoms have we, or TV shows that we've seen get canceled because that first or second week, the ratings weren't where the networks wanted them. So yeah, I think giving things time to breathe and grow, and we as wrestling fans need to stop being assholes and overanalyzing and critiquing everything. And again, creating this tribalism between wrestling companies. And you and I tongue in cheek a lot of it on social media and through Instagram. And there are some times that I'm a little serious about it, but I think for the most part, we're having fun. And, you know, with this podcast, it's, you know, trying to find, you know, because you mentioned doing the worst of 2024. And I wanted to be a little bit more positive, but I'll throw it to you. You know, what was one bad thing in 2024 that you don't want to repeat it in 2025? And don't say my ring announcing at the Stride return.
Oh, I didn't see that. No one saw that. My half sarcastic, half serious answer is I wish Adam Cole didn't have his ankle heal and be back on TV. But you know, that's another example of a story that was set in place and then had injury happen and they couldn't pivot and tell a compelling storyline. And now they're trying to retcon and finish it. And we'll see what happens on the pay-per-view tonight as we record this. But that is a storyline that should have just been changed and dropped and moved on and figure out something else. You know, it's I will call it right now the Black Scorpion of AEW.
Okay.
The devil storyline with MJF and Adam Cole.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and I honestly haven't watched enough to identify what was the worst or what was something that I didn't like that I saw. Other than, you know, kind of the unnecessary negativity from wrestling fans. And again, I think that some of it comes from, I do think that some of these folks go online just to stir shit up and make people react and respond and that kind of thing. You know, I hope that we see success for all companies in 2025. The Netflix deal, I think, is going to be good. I think that the Max deal for AEW is going to be good. And we're going to continue to see wrestling, WWE specifically, but I think, you know, AEW is going to come around and we're going to see records set. We're going to see new things happening and continue to grow and thrive. And I hope that trickles down all the way down to these little lowly podcasts like this one, that people recognize and see it and enjoy it. And you know, we've been putting out, I forgot to plug it last week, the Connections game. That's on the My123Cents Facebook page and on Twitter and whatnot. So if you like the Connections puzzles from the New York Times, you can now create your own. I've done it for my job at work or for my work life and chat. And I've got one coming out this week as well. So check them out, play them, let us know how you did and give us some ideas, suggestions for 2025, what you want to see and hear from the brand and from the podcast. Chad, is there anything else as we put a bow on 2024 for this year's podcast?
Yeah, I think, you know, real quick, just the worst of WWE. I will say the Alpha Academy storyline where, you know, Chad Gable had Otis and Tozawa and Maxxine Dupri with him. And then he became a jerk and fired him and aligned with the Creed brothers, and that storyline kind of went nowhere. It was building to Otis turning on Gable, which now I believe they're wrestling at the Netflix Raw debut, but it's like 6 months past the time when that was a major storyline. So, so I would say that is the worst for WWE right now that I could think of.
I also wanted to, one of the other bright spots, I think, for not just WWE, but for wrestling in general, has been the emergence of female wrestling. I talked about Toni Storm and Mariah May earlier. I think they were probably one of the bright spots of 2024 for AEW. But WWE, with I am a huge Chelsea Green fan, so the fact that she won the U.S. Championship, what they did the other night on SmackDown, I love what they're doing with her. She is one of those two, I feel like, that has sometimes they, you know, the old saying where you have to, sometimes you have to eat shit and learn to like the way it tastes. And I feel like, you know, her and Daniel Bryan and Zack Ryder, to an extent, you know, these folks did it and got over, and despite that, and I think there are big things on the horizon for her, and they're trying to play her off still as a heel. And I don't know if that's going to work in 2025, because she has become so popular amongst the internet fans that I think that's going to spill over into, you know, everyday life as well. But she does have that annoying character that works. And I did want to commend and applaud what she's doing. And I don't disagree with you about the Alpha Academy stuff. It seems like it's, and the Wyatt Six as well. And I know that the intentions there were good and noble, to carry on the legacy and tradition of Bray Wyatt. I don't feel like it's translating and working, but maybe it gets resurged in 5.
Yeah, again, I think the Wyatt Six is an example of the classic, and then the bell rang storyline, where it, and we probably mentioned it here before, so longtime listeners, I'm going to repeat myself. The characters are fine, but it doesn't make sense when the Wyatt Six comes out, scares everybody. It's all spooky wooky. And then you go to commercial and you come back and you're like, okay, now we're moving on to, it's like, wait, what just happened 3 minutes ago? You know, that, I mean, that's the whole thing. Like when they first debuted and killed everybody backstage, and they're like, yeah, okay, we'll come to work next week and we'll be fine. Oh, Chad Gable's fine. Cool. He didn't really do anything. You know, it doesn't. And that's a fine balance. And I think, again, going back to Chikara, I think it could have worked in Chikara because of the rules set up for the Chikara universe, as opposed to the rules set up for the WWE universe. And I do think Bo Dallas should wrestle without the Uncle Howdy mask and just be kind of Bo Dallas, kind of like what the other guys do.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I think, and given their real lack of presence, I don't know if it's to make them more of a spectacle or if it's just, they realize like, hey, what do we do with them once you have to wrestle? How do we tell that story? So.
Very well said. Yeah. Well, Chad, thank you so much for being a part of this week and this year's My 1-2-3 Cents. It is year 10, or I guess technically now year 11. So. Thank you for listening and or watching to this week's episode. You will win a prize if you share this week's podcast. So we'll see who listened and watched all the way through. Just share it on your social media platform. I will get a notification and you will receive a prize. So be sure to continue to like, tweet, retweet, repost, whatever the phrases and the terminology that kids are using today is. Have a happy and safe new year, and we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.